Hey everybody, this is A to Easy. My name is Harry. Welcome to our first episode on gastroenterology. Today we're going to be covering ulcerative colitis, and we're going to be starting off by talking about the pathophysiology and the epidemiology, and then we're going to be moving on to the bread and butter of the disease, talking about the clinical features and the investigations you need to confirm a diagnosis of ulcerative colitis. So to kick things off, I've got Yvonne here with me.
Hello everyone, how are you?
They're not going to be a reply, just to let you know. So,
tell me, what is ulcerative colitis?
It is a form of inflammatory bowel disease, which is a fancy word for two separate conditions, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, which are kind of on a spectrum with each other. But today we're just talking about UC, or ulcerative colitis. If you break it down, so colitis is colon inflammation because it's an itis, and that means inflammation of the large bowel. And ulcerative is just a description, meaning it contains ulcers.
And what are ulcers?
So if you think of the large bowel as basically a tube, an ulcer is a break in the tube that is incomplete, so it doesn't go all the way through, sort of goes deep into the bowel wall and is an inflammatory process which causes damage. So ultimately you've got this damaging process, this type of inflammation in the large bowel, and that's the condition.
Okay, so what does it lead to?
So you have a disease process that starts distal to proximal. What that means is that it goes from the rectum to the sigmoid to the descending colon to the transverse colon to the ascending colon, but it doesn't move past the ileal cecal valve.
Okay. And what causes this inflammation?
So to be honest, we don't actually know. If your consultant asks you this, say there is a breakdown of the immune tolerance to the normal gut microbiome. So your body launches an immune response to the gut microbes, leading to inflammation. But research is ongoing.
Do we know who gets it?
Yeah, so it's mainly young people. So in exam terms, I would immediately go to, yes, it's a young person, typically between their 20s and their 30s, who presents with ulcerative colitis. In real life, we describe it as being a bimodal distribution, which is fancy for there are two peaks in your lifetime. Again, the main one is in 20s to 30s. The other one is when you're a bit older, say like 50s to 60s.
But it's most commonly in younger people, for exam purposes at least.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So you think of a young person for ulcerative colitis when you're thinking of exam.
What about gender? Men, women?
Technically, it's more common in men, but it's a really minor difference. So again, for exam purposes, I wouldn't bother to learn it. I would just say, think of young people, 20s to 30s. That's your target group for this condition.
Okay. And do we know any genetic component?
Yes, so there are two I think it's probably worth that you know about.
For your written exams, but not for real life.
The two are both human leukocyte antigens. So that's HLA antigens, which if you haven't heard of, maybe just give that a quick Google, but it's, again, not hugely relevant to the story of UC. So there are two HLA mutations that you want to be aware of. So mutations in HLA2, which is a specific allele in HLA, and then also HLA-B27, which is relevant in lots of other conditions as well. Those are the two that are vaguely associated.
The key idea is that a positive family history is important.
The other thing you might want to be aware of is there are some antibodies often found in UC, but this story is slightly more complicated than I'm letting on right now, and the antibodies you might want to be aware of are called P-ANCA antibodies, so anti-neutrophil cytoplasmic antibodies, but no one actually ever says them, so just say P-ANCA.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not learning the full sentence for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I had to Google that.
So young people present with UC, mainly men, and how do they present?
So in one word, they present with diarrhea.
Okay, so what kind of diarrhea?
Again, in one word, it's horrendous. So it's a really loose bowel movement that is high in frequency. So they're going several times a day. And the key two facts about it are that it contains blood, so fresh blood. This isn't blood on wiping, which you might get in hemorrhoids. This is blood in the actual pan of the toilet. And then they also get mucus in the stool. So those are the two things that I would really say you should ask on history. Mucus and blood are the classic hallmarks of UC.
And do we know why that happens? Why do they get diarrhea?
Think about it as a colitis. There's inflammation of the large bowel. That inflammation causes damage to the epithelium. And ultimately what that does is it erodes parts of it in the ulcers that we spoke about before. And when you erode parts of it, some mucus gets dislodged and taken off, and that upsets the gut, increases motility of the bowel, and therefore you get more rapid bowel transit, which means you get diarrhea. So you get mucus-containing diarrhea.
Okay. Any other features towards that point towards UC?
So on UC on history, the other things you'll be looking for are weight loss, specifically that significant unintentional weight loss. So in medicine, we generally care after about 5% weight loss or a few kilos is what we class as significant. These patients are actively losing weight.
Okay, so we have bloody diarrhea, mucus, and weight loss in a young patient so far.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so what's the cause of this disease?
So UC, unlike its counterpart, sort of happens in flare-ups, is the way they describe it. So it's just generally quite discrete episodes that you're almost okay in between. But with UC, you'll go from being kind of happy, your bowel movement's fairly normal, to having these horrendous episodes of really awful diarrhea and blood and mucus involved. So yeah, acute bouts, flare-ups.
Mm. And is there a way to grade the severity of a flare-up?
There's a scoring system, it's a severities index, and it's called the True Love and Wit Index. I wouldn't learn anything more than that, but the good thing about it is you can use it to grade how bad their UC is. A good rule of thumb is that if they, say, have 8+ a day, bloody bowel movements, 8 or more, then you'll probably think about admitting this patient. That's a good rule of thumb. True Love and Wit is just a more accurate way of doing it.
So if they have a flare-up, they go to, they're admitted to hospital, but otherwise they have a chronic management. So Harry, tell me about the long-term complications of UC.
So because UC is essentially a chronic inflammatory disease of the bowel, that inflammation can cause cancer, which means you get colorectal cancer. And colorectal cancer often needs to be removed, so we can do very specific surgeries for that, say after 20 years of having the disease, because the risk is quite high by that point. You might want to remove the large bowel. And it's a kind of interesting fact, I think it's interesting anyway, about this procedure. So the procedure itself is called a panproctocolectomy. They're removing it all of your large bowel. And because of that, you actually end up having the rectum removed as well. And they make you a new rectum, essentially, as part of the procedure from the ileum. However, you know, if you have a limb amputation, you can actually get pain in that limb, the limb that's been removed. It's called phantom limb pain. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
So interestingly, in this case, you get a similar kind of thing. So when you've had your rectum removed, you can get phantom rectum pain, which is something I was told and didn't believe. But yeah, it definitely happens. And you guys won't forget it either.
Well, it sounds very awful, I have to say. And apart from UC patients having an increased lifetime risk of colorectal cancer, what are the other complications that you might have alongside?
So, a small number of UC patients will have another condition, which is, again, shortened to a number of letters. So it's called primary sclerosing cholangitis, at least currently anyway. They like changing the names of these things. So that's a shortened to PSC. So the thing to note is that patients who have primary sclerosing cholangitis very commonly have UC. Now, that isn't the same the other way around. So patients who have UC will rarely have this complication of their disease. But it's an autoimmune condition which has antibodies associated with it. And if you remember those antibodies we said earlier,
P-ANCA?
Yes, absolutely. So P-ANCA antibodies are commonly found in PSC, and it's localized mainly to the biliary tree, so just below the gallbladder. That is it in a nutshell. I really wouldn't learn more about it.
So to summarize, UC is a type of IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, which has complications including the primary sclerosing cholangitis, PSC, which is a P-ANCA positive autoimmune disease.
Yeah, absolutely. There's too many abbreviations for this, but enjoy trying to learn this, guys. The key thing to know is there's episodes of bloody diarrhea of mucus. There have some really quite awful complications like colorectal cancer, and it's a disease that occurs in the young.
Okay. So a patient with UC is admitted to the hospital, and let's say you're on the ward round. Your consultant asks you to examine them. What things are you looking for?
So from examinations from a gross point of view, when you just look at them across the bed, I think you wanna look at them and see if they're kind of pale.
Because you lose iron from losing blood.
Absolutely. They're losing more iron than they should be. That leads to iron deficiency anemia. And there are various symptoms of that that are worth knowing. Shortness of breath, conjunctival pallor, and visible pallor at the bedside are the three things I would be looking for from an iron point of view.
Anything else that you'll be looking at?
There's another less common feature you might want to consider, which is called angular stomatitis, which is also known as angular chelitis. I don't know why there are these two separate terms for it.
Well, fun fact here, stoma in Greek is the mouth, whereas hili, which is colitis, is lips. So I think it's practically the same thing. It's the same word. It's not the same word, but that is
different etymology, but the same principle. I had no idea. Okay. Damn, okay. All right. Depending whether it's a problem of the mouth or the lips, but ultimately what we're looking at in our terms is there is some redness and there is some cracking around the lips.
And why do we get that?
So you can get that for a few things. You can get that for iron deficiency, and I believe you can also get it for vitamin B12 deficiency, which is again a thing that you could have.
And you have vitamin B12 deficiency because of a loss of absorption of vitamins in the gut, I presume?
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, anything else you'd be looking at?
I think another thing you might want to look at is in the hands, and it's the thing that we always look for in the hands, clubbing. People, if you haven't heard of it before, clubbing is just an increase in tissue below the nail, and no one really knows what it is or why it happens, to be perfectly honest with you. Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis are both known causes of clubbing. So you should look in the hands for clubbed fingernails.
Anything else you might be interested in? What about the abdomen?
Yeah, so I think, remember, they've had really horrendous diarrhea for that entire day if they've come in to see you. So I would not be surprised at all if you see some generalized abdominal tenderness. And that's just because they've been going to the toilet so often. It's nothing particularly insightful.
Similarly, they can be tachycardic with a fever.
So, summary. We have taken the history. It's a young patient who has come with bloody mucosy diarrhea, has clapped fingers with pale conjunctivae. Then your consultant asks you, okay, what investigations do we do?
Okay. So, for starters, remember that whenever your consultant asks you anything about investigations, you start at the bedside, and then you move on to bloods, and then you move on to imaging, and then any special tests. That's your format. That is the way they're expecting it, and the way you should therefore deliver it. So from the bedside, I think you might actually want to do a fecal test, and there's two you could want to possibly do. One of them is your MCNS, is what everyone calls it, but that's microculture and sensitivity. This is not useful for UC in itself, but it's useful to rule out gastroenteritis as a cause, because you're always going to consider some differentials. So check for infection. Get a stool MCNS.
Alongside that, you should do the C. diff toxin test. That's important because it's actually associated with 15% of flare-ups.
And then once that's ruled out and come back negative in a few days' time, you know it's not that.
But a key initial test right now would be a fecal calprotectin.
So the classic is fecal calprotectin. And what exactly do we mean by that?
So calprotectin is a inflammatory marker that is passed through in the feces.
Okay, but what about sensitivity and specificity?
It's a sensitive test because it is good at picking up inflammation of the bowel, and therefore someone who has UC will have inflammation of the bowel, and therefore they will have a raised fecal calprotectin. However, lots of conditions can cause a raised fecal calprotectin, so it's not very specific, okay?
So, you've done your bedside tests, you've checked their poo to see if there's fecal calprotectin or any bacteria. What next?
So let's do some bloods. We've spoken a lot about anemia already, so therefore you're not going to be surprised when I say let's do a full blood count and just see what their hemoglobin is, you know, what their MCV is, to see whether it is an iron deficiency anemia. You also maybe want to look for other vitamin deficiencies that might be happening. So we mentioned already B12, folate. These are less common, but you do want to check for them. Another thing, if you're considering for infection, alongside your MCNS, you might want to do a CRP, so a C-reactive peptide, and that is a good marker for any sort of inflammatory process again, but via the blood, and that often goes up during infections.
Okay, so we discussed about blood tests, which is basically, we are particularly interested in hemoglobin and some vitamin deficiencies, B12 and folate, and then we're checking for inflammatory markers, aka CRP.
Oh, you also might want to do clotting, and the simple reason is because there is a chance that the reason they are bleeding from their bowel is because they've got some sort of clotting disorder. It's not very common at all. It's very small print, but it's worth knowing if that's a thing that's exacerbating it and something you might want to treat separately.
Okay, so you check for clotting as well. So apart from blood tests, do you do any imaging or anything like that?
So as simple imaging, you could do an abdominal x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only really useful for a few radiological signs. But there are two that you might want to know because they again come up in exams and they're worth knowing. The first one is called lead pipe.
Lead pipe, why?
Firstly, let's forget lead pipe rigidity, which happens in Parkinson's. This is a different thing. We're looking at an abdominal x-ray, and what it shows in the radiograph is a piece of the large bowel that is dilated, and it is smooth. So you remember how in the large bowel you normally get little striations in them? Do you know what they're called?
Tenia?
No.
No, what is it?
Hostra.
Hostra. Is tenia the other things that...
Side along. They go side along.
Yeah.
So they are the things that give the bowel, the large bowel specifically, its sort of segmented look. It's little sections.
Mm-hmm.
And so in lead pipe colon, you lose those sections. And that just causes it to look like a long pipe.
Okay.
Which for some reason is magically made of lead. I don't know why. I really don't. But this is the imagination of radiologists at work. And there is one other sign that you might want to consider.
Which is?
So that is... It's got a much cooler name. It's called toxic megacolon. So it sounds like a death metal band. If I was starting a band, which I'm never going to do.
Please don't name me that. Please do not name me that.
We're not doing that, don't worry. So, okay. Toxic megacolon is really, really bad. And it is an acute complication of UC and to some extent Crohn's disease. All it means is this horrendously dilated bowel, which is definitely inflamed.
In terms of imaging, we get lead pipe colon and toxic megacolon.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other tests we would like to do?
A colonoscopy. So that is just a camera that goes inside the large bowel and visualizes all the large bowel from the inside. And the reason that is important because you can clearly visualize the ulcers that we mentioned at the very beginning in these UC patients. So that is your diagnostic number one test.
So your gold standard, as we say in medicine.
So your gold standard test is colonoscopy. And that is what I would say to my consultant. I would sit there smiling and be like, yay, I answered it correctly. And then they'll probably tell me I'm wrong, just to spite me. But that's a story for a different day.
Hey everyone, this is Sally, and I'm here with your 30-second summary of ulcerative colitis. Let's go. So UC is an inflammatory bowel disease that causes distal to proximal ulceration of the large bowel. Patients are typically young and will give a history of flares of bloody, mucousy diarrhea with some chronic weight loss. On examination, they may be pale, they may have clubbing, and they may have some generalised abdominal tenderness. What you need to do are a set of blood tests, a stool MCNS, and a faecal calprotectin. On imaging, you may see lead pipe sign and you may see toxic megacolon sign. If you actually want to see these right now, have a look at our description because we've got some good links. Finally, and most importantly, your gold standard investigation for UC is colonoscopy plus biopsy. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening.